Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
Maybe I just need to fully embrace who I've become. It is the old guy that complains about things. Maybe I've always been this person, and I'm just maybe more mindful of it as I'm getting older. This shouldn't even be a hot take. Now, earlier we were talking about Rob is already starting the Christmas season. He's playing Christmas music. He and his wife are now putting up Christmas decorations and ornaments and things around the house, and it just feels a little bit too early to me. It used to be 12 days of Christmas. Now it's 2 months of Christmas. It just seems a little excessive. Now, I am all for the Christmas spirit. I love Christmas. I don't know why we can't just continue to celebrate fall. We then have Thanksgiving. And then when Thanksgiving is over, hey, it's Christmas time, baby. Go ahead and get the tree. Let's get the eggnog. Let's watch Home Alone. Let's watch all your favorite Christmas movies over the course of the next month. I don't know why we can't do it that way, but you know what? You're entitled to do what you want to do. This next take, I don't even think is me being an old guy and being upset. I think it's just common sense based on watching the NFL. So I imagine that my day was a lot like yours yesterday. You do a little family stuff, a little trick-or-treating. You got Thursday night football in the background. You're watching. You got one eye on the game. You got one eye on the kiddos. You got one eye. You're doing a lot of other stuff, right? Well, Rob, I had Devontae Adams to score the first touchdown of the game. I just kind of felt like it's time. It's due. I thought Devontae Adams was going to score the first touchdown of the game. So when the Jets had the ball and they were driving, I was like, hold on. We can go back out and trick-or-treat some more, but let me finish the drive. Let me see how it ends. I wanted to see if my bet was going to cash. Well, it didn't cash. Joe Mixon scored the first touchdown. It wasn't supposed to be Joe Mixon. It was supposed to be, I believe his name is Emmanuel Corley. I believe that's the gentleman's name. For those of you that have seen the play, the Jets run a little end-around, and it was a great play design. And as Corley is running into the end zone, he does the DeSean Jackson. He drops the ball before he gets in the end zone. It is now a touchback, and the Texans get the ball at the 20-yard line because it's a touchback. And I'm beside myself, not because I lost, but because how many times do we have to see a college or an NFL player do this? How hard is it to maintain possession of the ball until you get in the end zone? And then when you get in the end zone, do whatever you want to do. I wish that they even lax the touchdown rules a little bit more than they are. If you want to pick up the pylon and use it like a golf club, great. If you want to dunk the football like Tony Gonzalez used to do, great. Now, there needs to be some rules. I don't think you should have a Sharpie in your sock the way T.O. did, or keep a cell phone underneath the goalpost the way that Joe Horn did, but I like the end zone and the touchdown celebrations. Rob, how do we have to continue to see these football players drop the football at the 1 yard line or right before they go in the end zone that results in a touchback? This happened during a college football game a couple of weeks ago. I can't remember which one it was. Was it the LSU game? I can't remember which one it was. Texan, I'm sure you remember what it was. This college player did the exact same thing that happened last night on Thursday Night Football, and he got real lucky because they didn't overturn it. I thought he let go of the ball before he gets to the end zone. How hard is it to just hold on to the ball all the way through, and then when you get in the end zone, do whatever dance you want to do. I don't care. Spike the football. Throw the football up in the stands. Play duck, duck, goose. Play imaginary sack hop races. I don't care. Hold on to the football. If you were on my team and you did this, this is an automatic fine. This is an automatic $100,000 fine. I got to make this hurt. You got to lose your game check doing some nonsense like this. We're not just, oh, we're going to show you the film and we're going to yell at you. No. This is the automatic $100,000 and or game check fine if you fumble the ball on your way to the end zone and take points off the board. It's the worst thing NFL players do on the field, and it's not close. There is nothing more annoying in an NFL game than watching a running back. It's usually the wide receivers. You're way ahead of everybody. You want to show out. I get it. You just scored a touchdown. Look at me. How did you leave the most important thing behind, possession of the football? Rob, it's so nonsense. It doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense at all. And there is a bunch of people who want to, there's a movement, let's call it that, of people who want to change the touchback rule. You know how, like, if the ball goes out of the end zone, I feel like the touchback rule exists because this keeps happening.
Just because of that.
This is the effect. I mean, I agree. A larger punishment is fine. If the Jets want to fine him a game check, live your life. But this is exactly why that punishment exists. Corley is scoring a touchdown. It's not a close play. It's not a great defensive effort. It's not. It's none of those things. He just is a step away from the end zone and drops the ball. Get into the end zone.
Score. That's like, it. Score. Once you score, do whatever. I don't care what you do. I really don't care what you do, but at least score. It's such nonsense is what it is.
And to make matters worse, and we had a little bit of this last night, whenever this happens, we get a review, and we get a lengthy review, and inevitably we have to have the conversation of he's dropping the ball, but it's still in his fingertips as he's crossing
it's nonsense.
The line.
No.
Is that possessed? He's trying to drop the ball.
Yeah, no, we need to have a rule. Whatever your intent was, no. You tried to let go of the football. No, I'm with you. It's nonsense. No, it's an absolute penalty. Rob, are you on the same, I guess, position that I'm in? Because if you look at college football this weekend, there are five teams. There's five ranked teams that go on the road to play an unranked opponent. Ole Miss goes on the road to play Arkansas. Oregon goes on the road to play Michigan, Indiana at Michigan State, K-State at Houston, and you also have Texas A&M at South Carolina. You agree that if you made a five-team parlay and you just took the money line for the five ranked teams, you would not cash your parlay. Look that up on the other side. Tell us what the parlay would be. You don't care about the spread. You just want to take, I'm going to take the ranked better team on the road against an unranked team. That is not a ticket that you are cashing. You are losing. One of these teams is losing. Now, I'm going to remove K-State. Not because I don't think K-State is not, they can't get gotten this way. I'm saying that because I think Houston's terrible. I think Houston is the worst of all of these teams that are the unranked home team. Any team that got handled by Kansas earlier this year, they're not pulling off a big time upset. So I'm going to remove Houston from this. You got Indiana, Texas A&M, Oregon, and you also have Ole Miss. I'm going to remove Oregon from this list as well, just because I don't think Michigan can score enough to keep up with Oregon. Even if Oregon plays down to Michigan's level, do you trust Michigan to score 24 points in this game? If you don't score 24 points, I just don't think you can beat quality opponents, especially when I believe that Oregon is going to win the Big Ten and go to the college football playoff. I don't think this Michigan team that has played four different starting quarterbacks this year, I don't think they're a team capable of pulling off the upset. So that leaves Ole Miss, Indiana, and Texas A&M. Which of those teams do you think is most likely to get bit? Which of those teams do you think is most likely to lose and severely damage their playoff chances out of those three teams?
So look it up just for fun while you were talking. If you were to take just those three games, like we remove the other parts of the equation out of there, here are if you took A&M on the money line, Indiana on the money line, Ole Miss on the money line is plus 206. That ain't cashing.
No, not at all.
No chance.
No.
I think of those teams, the team that's in the most trouble is A&M. I agree with what John Kurtz said. Like, we've seen the story before. South Carolina is a difficult place to play.
And you also just had an emotional home win last week. Now
big
you go on the road
win.
In conference
exactly.
play at night. Yeah, this is a real dangerous spot for A&M.
I know your quarterback. I don't know who the starter technically is. There's Wegman. You're mixed matching quarterbacks. This is where that kind of game usually gets you beat. I think it was last season. Maybe it was two seasons ago now. I think it was Tennessee was a one-loss team. They were flying high. It was the year they beat Bama in Knoxville. They tore down the goalposts. The ensuing week, they went on the road to South Carolina, and they got whooped. South Carolina is a good team, not a great team, but they're good enough to get you. And if you're not on your game on the road in that stadium, Sandstorm gets playing. I think South Carolina is the most likely to pull the upset.
You know how we always call it chargering, or you think Mizzou is going to Mizzou at some point? A&M hasn't A&M'd yet. They haven't yet. They have two opportunities to A&M. On the road against South Carolina, on the road against Auburn. The A&M that you and I know, not the ones that our parents know that beat K-State in the Big 12 championship. I mean, the A&M that you and I know, the Johnny Manziel A&M Aggies, the Kevin Sumlin Aggies, they lose one of those two games. This is not an A&M team, at least traditionally, that they go 11-2 and they make the college football playoff. No, they go on the road, they get beat by South Carolina, South Carolina storms the field, and we're done talking about A&M being a college football playoff team. A&M, you did the hard part last week. You controlled and you beat LSU. I would say that the college football playoff is right in front of you. You got three games before you play Texas, South Carolina, New Mexico State, and Auburn. If you win those three games, I believe you're going to the college football playoff. Don't slip up. Because November, this is peak time for you to slip up. You've been reading your press clippings. You got a couple of wins. You already feel like you've done something. And next thing you know, you lose on a last second field goal. And now you are in the middle of college kids storming the field. And you mad because you thought you were going to the Rose Bowl. Nope, you were going to the Pop-Tart Bowl. That is how quickly things can turn for you in college football. I'm with you. I think that A&M is in a really rough spot. I also think that Ole Miss is in a tough spot. On the road against Arkansas, they got a mobile quarterback, great home field advantage. I think Arkansas is capable of pulling off the upset as well. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Welcome back into The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here with you. Coming up in about 40 minutes or so, we are going to be joined in studio by Nate Taylor. All right, let's play this audio for you guys really quickly. This is Greg Olson. This audio is courtesy of The Ringer. He was on the Ryan Russillo podcast. You guys know that there is a quarterback problem right now in the NFL, at least in regards to how you develop quarterbacks. Here's Greg Olson's theory on why that is.
There is no doubt we have a quarterback problem in the NFL. I think a lot of it's man-made. Asking your quarterback to stand in the shotgun, catch the ball, and play and throw the ball every down is virtually impossible in today's day and age. But these guys don't learn to get under center. They've never taken an under center snap in their lives. Their entire lives have been 7-on-7 football. It's been passing offense. I coach middle school football here at my kid's school. Of the 8 games we played, 6 of the teams never one time lined up under center, never one time had 2 backs in the backfield, and never one time had a tight end. The best teams, they get under center. It's play action. The reason they're doing that is because it takes the stress load off the quarterback. So I think there is a developmental problem in the whole pipeline of quarterbacks from high school to college, and then, of course, to the NFL. We want the entire game to be on their shoulders, and then we get mad when they can't handle it at 22 years old. You can't tell me that these guys aren't wildly talented. They need to be coached. They need to be developed. I just don't think as a league in general, we do a good job of that.
I think the two biggest problems, I would say 3 biggest problems right now with quarterback development. Let me clear it up. There's 3 major problems. The number one problem I think the NFL has with quarterback development is its lack of reps in college. We talked about this earlier in the week. Anthony Richardson threw less than 400 passes while he was in school. Patrick Mahomes threw 1,400 passes. So Patrick Mahomes just played far more football entering the NFL than a guy like Anthony Richardson or Trey Lance. That we've seen this happen with a handful of these prospects. They get drafted off measurables, not necessarily from what you see on tape. You drafted Anthony Richardson because physically he's Cam Newton, 6'5", can run a 4.3, and he fits all of those measurables. But that's not what the tape showed you. He threw 17 touchdown passes at the University of Florida. Now, that's a guy that you would spend a top three pick on the way that Indianapolis did. So I think some of it is very similar to what we see in Major League Baseball draft class, very similar to what we see in the NBA. You were not drafting the player. You were drafting the prospect. You were drafting the physical, the measurements, and thinking that you can turn them into a player, and that's a real dicey thing to do. So that's number one, in my opinion, for why we are struggling at developing quarterbacks. The second thing is, and Rob, you and I just disagree, the further and further we have got away from establishing the run, and that being a focal part of your offense, has made it harder and harder to develop young quarterbacks. You used to be able to kind of get by because you were a run the football, play great defense kind of offense. But if you're asking your quarterback to come into the NFL, and to what Greg Olsen just said, you're going to be in shotgun, you're going to throw it 30 or 40 times, it's going to be a real steep learning curve. Defenses are too complex. Defenses are too fast. That you have taken away one of the best things that we used to give our running backs. If you had a great tight end that could operate in the middle of the field and you could run the football, you could really help develop a young quarterback. But as the NFL has become more pass heavy and more pass dependent and less involved with running the football, it's put a strain on 21 and 22 year old quarterbacks who are coming in to the NFL. And the last thing is, and this is a real deep football point, it's now harder to play offensive line than ever before, too. It's less physical in the offseason. And I tell you guys all the time, football is not, it's very different than any other game we follow. There's no way to simulate it. You can play baseball down at the minor league level and get, you know, experience that way and face guys who used to be in the majors or guys who are high prospects. You can get 400, 500 ABs down there before you come up to the show. In basketball, you can play basketball in a way and prepare yourself for sort of what the NBA is going to be like. You can only get better at football by playing more football, and there is just less and less opportunities for you to play football than before. Think about the football practices that you guys had in high school. Your high school practices are more intense than what NFL players go through. You've been to NFL training camp. It's not intense in any way. It's not physical in any way. How else do you improve offensive line play? How do you get Wanye Morris to where he needs to be in a less physical practice space than ever before? And I think you have seen the trickle-down effect. It goes back to what we were talking about with C.J. Stroud. I don't think that C.J. Stroud is any worse this year than he was last year. That team just can't block. That team can't block. That team can't protect him. So on obvious passing downs, they are just releasing the hounds on C.J. Stroud. He was running for his life on third and long and second and long situations yesterday. So I'm looking at a quarterback that has an over 90 quarterback rating, and people are telling me that that guy's taking a big step back. No, the infrastructure around him is significantly worse than it was last year. This team can't block, and this team is injured at wide receiver. That's just a really hard foundation for you to win and have long-term success.
We do disagree on running the ball. I do think running the ball does aid and make quarterback development easier when you do have weaponry beyond just, hey, sling it around the yard. But I think your point about development is spot on. And I think on top of that, I think NFL teams are quicker now to eject on quarterback than ever before. I have no stats to back that up, but it feels like after a 1-year sample size, teams know, okay, we're done. It's not going to work. Or they go, okay, we have something. No one operates in the gray anymore. You made your baseball minor league analogy. How many players, the Royals are a good example of this, in the organization took longer to develop than baseball America would have liked? It happened a lot, but they came up and they were productive major league players. And that's all that matters. In football, it's, hey, after one 17-game season, it didn't work. We have another top 10 pick. We have to get another quarterback because this guy stinks. Look at the Panthers. They are probably going to draft a quarterback in the first round next year. They, after 2 years, are done with Bryce Young. 2 years?
Really quickly, we say 2 years. It was really like 19 games and they were done with Bryce Young.
It wasn't even two full years. Look what the Cardinals did a couple years back. They gave Josh Rosen 1 year. Okay, that failed. It's out. We're done. We can name quarterback after quarterback who it was like, hey, you got drafted. You're the savior of the franchise. 18 to 20 games later, you're not the savior. We're out. We eject. I mean, Carson Wentz had a little bit of this in Philadelphia. He was the guy, and then things looked, you know, hairy. Then they drafted a new guy, and they ran him out of town after 4 years. Like, I think owners, GMs, fans, the whole football community quits on quarterback faster than any other position in any other sport. We talked about Xavier Worthy on the show earlier this week, and I said I think he's a little bit behind the learning curve. Text line filled up with, well, he's a rookie. Give him time. Give him time. Give him time. And that's fair. We don't do that at quarterback. Hey, this guy is a bust or a success, and we think that after six games, and we hold on to that feeling, and nothing shakes us.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think a lot of that is the fact that just the NFL hiring cycle just moves faster than it did before. But, I mean, we are not that far removed. And you remember, you and I are from the same football generation that every team was like, well, if you can win a Super Bowl with Trent Dilfer, then you can win a Super Bowl with anybody. Well, if you're telling me, because the text line tells me that defenses have caught up with offenses and now this is a different football league, why can't we get back to what it was? Like, listen from, so this is from 2000. Trent Dilfer, Kerry Collins, Brad Johnson, Rich Gannon, Jake Delhomme, Matt Hasselbeck. These are quarterbacks that went to the Super Bowl in the early 2000s. This wasn't that long ago. You know what all of those teams had in common? All those teams ran the football. All those teams played defense. I know that we have fallen in love with the pass, and I know that quarterback is the most important position in the NFL. Man, it wasn't that long ago where if you were great at running the football and you were great at playing defense, you had a chance to win. Not everybody is going to have Patrick Mahomes as their starting quarterback or Tom Brady as their starting quarterback. We have seen a generation of where other quarterbacks can win the Super Bowl. So the same way in the NBA, I know it's a little bit different, but follow me here. The NBA is just so caught up on, we got to shoot threes, we got to shoot threes. All right, well, you don't got Steph Curry on your team. You also don't have Jason Tatum, and you also don't have Jaylen Brown. How do you win a championship? And eventually, I think you are going to see a team win a championship a different way, and the league is going to shift. Everything goes in a cycle, right? Everything is cyclical in that way. Are we going to see a team that maybe beats you the same way that the Ravens did in 2000s or the Giants did in 2000s or Tampa Bay did in 2002. If you were telling me that the era of the high-flying quarterback is over and it's just not going to be throw the ball all over the yard, are we going to get back to seeing teams run the football, play great defense, play good special teams, and be well coached? Is that what we are potentially looking at as being the answer to fixing some of the quarterback issues in the league?
You know what's interesting about that list you laid out, the Matt Hasselbeck grouping? A lot of those quarterbacks were guys that were on other rosters and then went to a Super Bowl with a different roster. A retread, if you will. How do we view retread quarterbacks in the league right now, Carrington? And by the way, I'm part of this problem. But right now, you, me, the NFL hierarchy, the people that talk NFL, if you have a retread quarterback, what do we say? Oh, you're just in a... You're just in a year until you figure it out. The Raiders are bad, but they're a good example of this. You know what we called Minshew? He's just a fill-in. He's just a stopgap until they find the guy. NFL owners and GMs don't look at the Matt Hasselbecks as viable options. Carson Wentz's starting days in the NFL are probably done. It more than likely, like being a full-time NFL starter. Or if he is a starter, he's on a terrible franchise. They're just trying to get to the next draft pick. That is what's interesting to me is there used to be multiple ways to skin a cat. You either draft your guy and you develop him and you go with him, or you would take a retread and build around him. But you can't do that anymore because quarterback contracts are bananas. So you have to pay pennies on the dollar for bad retreads. And then you're just in this endless loop of retread draft. How much of this conversation is because quarterback contracts have gone banana land, and either you got to pay all your money.
I would also say, because
you can't afford a regular retread. Like the Steve Bono for the Chiefs, you can't afford that right now in the NFL. He's too good to be paid nothing.
Yeah, I guess I would just say that, some of this to me is just walking away from some of the average quarterbacks that teams are just signing themselves up for. Like, there was no reason to sign yourself up long-term for Trevor Lawrence, and we just saw a team do it. It was all the sense in the world to walk away from Daniel Jones and be the team that we are talking about, where you run the ball, you play good defense, you build the offensive line. Like, teams are just choosing to be this way, which to me just doesn't really make a lot of sense. I guess this is in the same vein as what we were talking about. I want to ask you a question. In the AFC, I think it is very obvious who is in this circle, right? Kansas City, Baltimore, and Buffalo. I would put all three of those teams in this circle. But my question to you is, who in the NFC would you put in the circle of trust?
With the knowledge you've been given, you are now on the inside of what I like to call the Burns family circle of trust. See, if I can't trust you, Greg, then I have no choice but to put you right back outside the circle. And once you're out, you're out. There's no coming back.
Well, I would definitely like to stay inside the circle.
I know we're putting the Lions inside the circle of trust. What other NFC team are we putting inside the circle of trust? We can go through the NFC East. Cowboys, Giants, Eagles, and Commanders. I would put the Commanders inside the circle of trust. I think the Commanders are a good, capable team. I'm not certain the Commanders can win the Super Bowl, but I think they're going to make the postseason. Their offense is fun. They feel like this year's version of the Houston Texans. They're going to win 10, 11 games. They're going to compete in that division. I do think Philadelphia in the end probably edges them out just a little bit to win that division. So I'll put the Commanders in the circle. I'll put the Eagles in the circle for now. I will probably eliminate the Eagles at some point solely because I don't like their head coach.
Their quarterback also hates their head coach, which is just crazy. So right now in the circle, you have the Chiefs, Bills, Ravens.
I'm just doing the NFC circle for this point. I'm okay with you. That's a separate circle.
All right. I wanted to make sure, because to have the Commanders in the same circle as the Chiefs.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. I'm not putting the Commanders in the same circle as the Chiefs. I do like the Commanders. I like the Eagles. I think they have been a little bit better than I've given them credit for. I'm going to eliminate my Nick Sirianni dislike. I'm going to remove myself from there. I do like the addition of Saquon Barkley, A.J. Brown being there. There's two different versions of Jalen Hurts. There's the one that has A.J. Brown and the one that doesn't. The one that has A.J. Brown is actually pretty decent. The one that doesn't is yikes.
I think it's just Detroit. I think Detroit is the singular team in the circle of trust, because here's my thought. The Commanders are good, but are we putting them in the circle of trust with the same category as the Lions? That feels a little unfair to the Lions.
Well, then I would say my point would be then, and maybe this is your answer then, if we're not putting the Commanders in that circle, then I'm not really sure how many teams we could put inside the circle of trust. So maybe your answer is just there's not many teams in the NFC that I trust, and that's perfectly fine. If you're telling me the Lions are the only team, but I don't know how you could with good conscience put San Francisco in there based on what we've seen them do so far. You know I like the Rams. They're a below 500 team right now. I can't put them in there. Honest to God, you might laugh at me. I really want to put Atlanta inside the circle of trust. I like this Falcons team. I think the Falcons are a legitimate contender in the NFC. Now, saying that has usually ended poorly for whoever had that opinion, but I like the Atlanta Falcons.
I think the only team is Detroit, because I think there are obvious flaws that make them not trustworthy with every other team. Like, let's go division leaders. The Cardinals. You're not putting the Cardinals in the circle of trust. I mean, Kyler Murray may have put down Call of Duty for now, but they're 500. Like, no. The Falcons. They have the weaponry, but Raheem Morris and Kirk Cousins are the group that you think are in the same circle of trust that can win a couple playoff games and represent the NFC in the Super Bowl? I don't think so. The Eagles are close, but I have not been able to remove my Sirianni dislike the same way you have. And I don't know I trust him. There's going to be another game this season they lose because he's a moron. That's coming. I think the Packers are close, but Jordan Love is never healthy, so it's really hard to bet on them. The Vikings seem close, but the say it out loud test, I trust Sam Darnold, that feels like I don't know that's correct. So now, and the Niners, you mentioned earlier, they're, what, 500 and are beat up? I think the only team inside the circle in the NFC is the Lions. Now, I think a tier down, or for the circle analogy, teams just outside the circle, there's a much larger grouping in the NFC.
Okay, that's perfectly fine. So then I'll ask you this question. I don't think you'll answer this honestly then. So based on what you're saying, because in the AFC, you would put more teams inside the circle of trust than you would in the NFC. Do you think it's more likely that Detroit makes the Super Bowl than Kansas City? Because if you were telling me that there's only one team you trust in the NFC, like right now, if I told you I will give you the Lions versus the field, is it more likely in that scenario, Chiefs versus the field than Lions versus the field, that you would rather take the field in the AFC than taking the field in the NFC against the Lions? That's kind of what it sounds like to me. I don't want to put words in your mouth, though.
I think if you said Chiefs versus the AFC field, Lions versus the NFC field, which one are you more comfortable betting? I would bet the Lions. And that is a product of the other teams in the NFC, just as much as the Lions. Lions are good, but I don't think they're, you know, the 98 Rams or something where it's like, oh, that team just can't be stopped. Or the 2020 Chiefs where it's like, oh, they're a behemoth. But I look around the rest of the NFC and they seem to have larger flaws than the Lions. And the Lions have a flaw. Their best pass rusher broke his leg. Like, bad. That was an injury we didn't need to see a replay of, Aiden Hutchinson. But outside of that, they do everything else well. Name another team in the NFC that only has one flaw. You can't, even the Commanders. The Commanders needed a Hail Mary to beat the Bears at home. The Commanders, they have a rookie quarterback. They're going to have rookie quarterback mistakes. The Niners can't get healthy. Jordan Love can't get healthy. The Vikings, honestly, also can't get healthy.
The only reason I'm surprised you have this opinion for this reason. Kansas City is far more likely to win on the road than the Lions are. If the Lions don't get the one seed, and you're telling me a team that has played basically all of their games this season indoors, you're telling me that they might have to go on the road for two Sundays in January, I am not picking Jared Goff to go on the road and win those games. So I hear what you're saying about the Lions, but in a division in where I would say there is one team that feels like they're their equal and they don't just have a clear path, the Chiefs have a pretty clear path to being the one seed here. And I know their games are outdoors, but you're telling me that Joe Burrow is coming to you, Josh Allen is coming to you, Lamar is coming to you, and they have to beat you on your terms. If the Lions got to go on the road in the postseason and they got to play the Packers, I'm picking the Packers to win that game. I'm not picking Jared Goff to go on the road in late January and beat any of those teams. I'm not picking them, and I like that Lions team. So I just look at the NFC, even with there being a clear favorite, I think the Lions certainly are the favorite in the NFC. I think it's anybody's ball game in the NFC. I don't look at the AFC as that way. I think it's Kansas City, and on the right day, given the right situation, sure. Could Buffalo beat them? Could Baltimore beat them? I'm looking at it. Atlanta could go to this thing. Green Bay could go to this thing. San Francisco could turn things around. The Rams could get healthy. I think there's like five or seven teams in the NFC that I think have shown themselves capable to potentially go on a run. Coming up on the other side, Rob, let's give people a parlay. We hit our NFL parlay last week. We've hit three straight weeks. We have hit a parlay for you guys. We'll try to do it again. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, welcome back into the show. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll be joined by Nate Taylor of The Athletic. Let me tell you that our weekly parlay is brought to you by Twin Peaks, where you can eat, drink, and see the scenic views. So this is what we do every week. We give you one college football parlay. We also give you one NFL parlay to hope you win a little bit of cash. For those of you that play these, we have hit a parlay in each of the last 3 weeks. So we are doing our best to try to help you win a little bit of money. Rob, if you will. Hit me with a little bit of music. Let's win the folks some cash. All right, in college football, there is only one direction for me to go. I actually don't really like this week in college football. This is going to be the least amount of action that I've had out over the course of a Saturday. I do like Penn State on the money line, but I'm not going to include that in my parlay. This is what I'm going to include in my parlay. In the last 55 meetings between two teams that were in the Service Academy, the under is 44-10-1. So the over-under for Air Force and Army is at 41.5. Now, I'm not worried about Army in this situation. I am a little worried about Air Force. So if you want, you can take the first half over-under at 21.5. Maybe this is a 14-7 game at halftime, or maybe Army is up 21-0. Air Force hasn't scored if you're worried about that. But for my official pick, I'm going to take the under on 41.5. I'm going to trust the trend, the fact that it has hit 44 out of the last 55 times between two games in the Service Academy. So my official pick for our college football parlay is give me the under in Air Force and Army at 41.5.
I'm going to take the over tonight's game, by the way. Boise State, San Diego State. I'm going to take the over with Ashton Gentry for rushing yards. Now, a lot of people are going to get scared away by the number because it's 191.5.
I would normally stay away from that.
That's a scary number, but Ashton Gentry is a freak. Up until last week, he was pacing to break Barry Sanders' single season record. And last week, he slowed to a halt, only having 150 plus on the ground against UNLV. Their opponent, San Diego State, gives up 160 yards per game on the ground. They have not seen a beast like Gentry. This game's on the blue turf. I like Gentry's over at 191.5. You play that with Carrington's under, and it's plus 246 on FanDuel.
All right, I am going to, in the NFL, I'm going to take David Montgomery for an anytime touchdown at minus 105. I'm surprised that there's not more juice attached to this. You're basically going to give me even money for a guy who has scored in all but one game this year, and that's a game that he left with injury. I mean, I understand how Jahmyr Gibbs is at minus 105. So are David Montgomery. Each of them have scored the last 3 weeks. I'm going to take David Montgomery as maybe the more consistent option here. He's also been their goal line option. So every week, if you're going to give me almost even money on David Montgomery, or you can play a boost over on FanDuel and add 30% odds to it, so you can get David Montgomery at plus money. I'm going to take it every single week. Give me David Montgomery minus 105 to score a touchdown against the Packers.
I'm going to take the Broncos plus 9.5. They're on the road at the Ravens, but the Ravens' defense is really bad. Like, we don't talk about it enough, but one of the reasons why the Ravens are not Super Bowl good is they can't stop a nosebleed. Jameis Winston was hibachiing them last week, just all over the yard.
I actually took him to throw for 300 yards. Mm-hmm. I laddered it up last week.
Bo Nix might not be that dude, but he's a good enough player, and Sean Payton's a good enough coach where they can figure out how to score. And you're giving me almost 10 points with two equal teams at 5-3. I'll take the Broncos plus 9.5. You pair that with a Montgomery touchdown, it's plus 272.
All right, those are a couple parlays. If you want to go ahead and lay a little bit of money on those, hopefully we help you out. Our weekly parlays brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eat, drink, and see the scenic views. I was thinking this before Nate Taylor joins us in just a little bit. This is the most entertaining Heisman race I believe we've seen probably since 1998 with Peyton Manning and Charles Woodson. If you think about all of the options that we have right now for the Heisman Trophy, you have Travis Hunter, who I would vote for Travis Hunter. I think he has clearly proven that he is the best player in college football. You were talking about a receiver that has five 100-yard games and is going to be a first-team All-Pro wide receiver, also a player who is going to be first-team All-Pro on defense. We have never seen a talent like this, not Charles Woodson, not Desmond Howard. We have never, ever seen a player like Travis Hunter at major college football who is a legitimate all-star on both sides of the ball. You have maybe the best running back, at least from a college running back perspective, we've probably seen since Reggie Bush with Ashton Jeanty from Boise State. And then you also have Cam Ward, who I think has to be included in that conversation, where in a normal year, I think that Cam Ward would be the favorite to win the award. He is the quarterback of a top 10 team, and he has been phenomenal this season. He has 24 touchdown passes. He has 5 interceptions. He also gives you a dynamic running ability. Cam Ward has had a fantastic season. You could also argue Dillian Gabriel should be in that conversation. He'd be a little bit further down the list for me, but those would be my top three. Heading into November, I would have the Heisman race. I would have Hunter 1, Jeanty 2, and then I would have Cam Ward as the third favorite coming into the Heisman Trophy. But I can honestly say, and it's usually not like this, it feels like it's anybody's game heading into the final 4 or 5 weeks of the regular season.
I agree with you, and I apologize. I said Gentry, not Jeanty. My apologies. I think at this point it's Travis Hunter's Heisman to lose unless Jeanty breaks Barry Sanders' record, which I still think he's going to do. Like, it. He's got, what, 5 games left? He's played in 7 games. He has 1,300 rush yards, which is just absolutely crazy. Barry Sanders' record is 2,600 yards in a season.
He's
averaging
8.7 yards per carry. It's just not realistic.
Stupid. I mean, but if he catches Barry Sanders, I will pivot away. If he breaks Barry Sanders' single-season record, which was at Oklahoma State, he had 2,600 yards his junior year, which, oh my God, in 11 games is incredible. If he breaks that record, okay, I think he's the Heisman. But for now, until he chases history, I think it's Travis Hunter's to lose, which you're right. In a normal year, like, Travis Hunter's are rare. Like, great corner, great receiver happens every season. We don't see it like that. Cam Ward probably is going to lose out, but he's going to lose out to possibly history and more history potentially. So, yeah, that I have it Hunter, Jeanty, and then distant third, Cam Ward. And Dillian Gabriel's probably on the list, but I don't know he makes New York. He should, but I don't think he will.
Yeah, I think he's going to make it. I think they like to have 5 players there, so I could see him just getting the nod because, I mean, you know, if you're the quarterback on the best team in the Big Ten, you certainly earn yourself a place there. There'll probably be one other player. At the beginning of the season, I thought it was kind of Quinn Ewers' Heisman Trophy to lose, and he's absolutely lost the Heisman Trophy over the course of the last couple of weeks. All right, let's step aside here. Coming up on the other side, we'll be joined in studio by Nate Taylor of The Athletic. A lot of Chiefs stuff to catch up with. We'll also get his thoughts on the rest of the NFL as the Chiefs don't play until Monday. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.